listening you love is on the free Odyssey app. Your trusted local radio stations, coverage of your favorite teams, live news from your hometown, and millions of podcasts on demand. Best of all, you can completely customize your listening experience. Follow topics you care about, like leagues and teams, pause or rewind your local sports and news, and add shows to your queue to catch up later. There's a lot to listen to, so get started and download the free Odyssey app today.
Live from the Police Show, yet not overly ostentatious studios of CBS Sports Radio here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to a Thursday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all of our great local CBS Sports Radio affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 158, and that free Odyssey app. 855-212-4CBS, number to jump on in, 855-212-4227. You could always get at me on Instagram, where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter, at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. We got a whole lot to do tonight. World Series game number 5 off the no-hitter from last night. Astros and Phillies all tied up at 2 games apiece. Justin Verlander going up against Noah Syndergaard. Week 9 of the football season officially kicks off tonight with Houston and Philadelphia. Just like baseball, just like in football, you'll have that matchup, except a little bit different. The Astros are actually good. The Texans stink. We know the Eagles are a dominant team at 7-0 and looking to just keep on piling up these wins. And we'll get into a little conversation later on in the show when they could potentially lose their first game of the year. The Pro Football Hall of Famer, Alan Faneca, is going to stop by today in addition to former Houston Astros player and team color analyst, Jeff Blum. But first up, producing the extravaganza for the next 4 hours, no other than Hot Take Hickey.
His dumb producer, Hot Take Hickey.
I got to start off with the World Series last night. Last night, unless you're a Phillies fan, was awesome. It was spectacular. And it was so cool to witness history. And the craziest part about this, as this has been a wild World Series, we're talking about a World Series where you have seen Aaron Nola and Zach Wheeler not pitch well. And this series is all tied up at 2 games apiece. When you look at the numbers, after 4 games of Aaron Nola and Zach Wheeler, you would think maybe that it was a sweep. If not a sweep, you're thinking that this is a closeout game tonight for the Houston Astros, but we're tied up at 2 apiece. And it's been tough to figure out momentum in this series, and it's vacillated from game to game because in game number 1, you had the Houston Astros up 5-0. Phillies come back. They win the game. And you're thinking that's a demoralizing spot for the Astros. Then Framber Valdez did a heck of a job in game number 2. The Astros tie up this series at 1 game apiece. And you go back to Philadelphia for that game 3 after the rainout and all that. And it was just home run after home run after home run after home run for the Fightins. And when that happened, in a city like Philadelphia, where the energy of the crowd is buzzing and it's wild and it's mayhem, you're looking at last night heading into game number 4 saying, this is a must win for the Houston Astros. Because if the Astros would have lost last night and you had a potential closeout game tonight in Philadelphia with the Phillies being 1 win away from winning the World Series, I don't care that Justin Verlander's on the mound. I know he's struggled immensely in the World Series in his past great career. But I would have taken the Philadelphia Phillies tonight. However, the Astros not only win, the Astros no-hit, a combined no-hitter against the Philadelphia Phillies, and it just shows you how baseball is so unpredictable. Like, I liked the Astros to win last night. No one could have ever predicted that it would have been a no-hitter because the Philadelphia Phillies in Game 3 were just mashing the ball. So here we are now, all tied up at 2 games apiece. And that no-hitter last night was so cool. And it's kind of crazy to me. And maybe it's just because we live in a society of complaints. I see some people today saying, oh, well, it's not really that impressive what happened last night. Because it wasn't one guy. And Christian Javier got pulled after 6 innings with the no-hitter, 97 pitches. It's not as impressive as a traditional no-hitter. I don't care. I don't care if it's one pitcher. I don't care if it's seven pitchers. Yes, one pitcher with a no-hitter, the way everyone is so meticulous about pitch counts, that is more impressive, but it doesn't mean that the no-hitter last night is unimpressive. It was still ridiculously impressive because of what we just said in game number three. Those Philadelphia Phillies bats, it was Hoskins, it was Bryce Harper, Kyle Schwarber. It was home run after home run after home run, and then they were just frigid cold last night. So I thought last night for baseball was a really cool night, and I sit here in a series that's now all tied at two games apiece, and I don't have a damn clue how this is going to play out. Now, before the series, my prediction was Astros in seven. I said split in Houston the first two, then the Phillies would take two out of three in South Philadelphia at the bank, and then I thought down 3-2, the Astros would win game six and game seven. But I have no feel on this series, and I do think that the Astros are the better team, but if the Astros go on to lose this World Series, you may say, well, it feels like you should have probably got the job done earlier with some of these shortcomings that we've seen from Aaron Nola and then also Zach Wheeler. But when you move your attention and turn your attention to the game tonight, the starting pitching matchup, the biggest story is Justin Verlander, because Verlander is 0-6 in the World Series in his career with the 6.07 ERA. One of the all-time great pitchers, a lock for a Hall of Fame, has pitched in the World Series in three different decades, has been a horrible World Series pitcher. And in game number one, he had a 5-0 lead and gave it back. So you would think it's just a matter of time for Justin Verlander to deliver in the World Series. And we've seen pitchers in the past, maybe not always getting to the World Series, but having shortcomings in the postseason and then dominating and going on one of these runs. But you would anticipate where how he had a lead and then gave it up in game one, that it can't be worse than what happened in game one. But if he gets shelled early, would that shock me? Absolutely not. Because everything that's gone on in this baseball postseason, the NL, hasn't made sense. And everything that's gone on in this World Series so far hasn't made sense. And I know sometimes baseball could be boring, could be slow, could be dull, but postseason baseball always delivers. And you're seeing that this year. In the AL, yes, the Astros have clearly been the best team. But in the NL, you had a 111-win Dodgers team, not even get to the league championship series. You had a 101 Mets team, a 101-win Atlanta Braves team, not even advance to the NLCS. Think about that. You had three teams in the NL, three, with over 100 wins. One didn't get out of the wild card, and the other two didn't get out of the NLDS. So now you have this Phillies team that's hot at the right time, and they rely so much on the long ball. And just in this series, we've seen stretches of them getting really cold and then really hot. But last night, to get no hit, you wonder how they're going to respond. And that's my two biggest thoughts on the game tonight. How will Verlander pitch with the terrible World Series of his past? And then how are the Philadelphia Phillies early going to respond? I think the first three innings of this game are enormous tonight. Because, yes, it's the World Series. Yes, you should be able to flush it. And I know last night, I think it was Kyle Schwarber who said, like, he doesn't give a bleep about getting no hit. You got to flush it quickly because this is a must-win game, in my opinion, for Philadelphia. If the Astros lose tonight, they go win two in Houston. If the Phillies lose tonight, I don't think that Philadelphia is going to win both games in Houston, what they would need to do to secure that piece of metal, as Rob Manfred would call it, in the Commissioner's Trophy. So this game is more important to Philadelphia, but even though you should be able to move on pretty quickly, you would think, because you got to flush, you have no other choice. If you, though, get no hit through the first three innings and Verlander gets that momentum, even though you were able to pitch a comeback against him in game one, you start to think, uh-oh, are we going through one of these stretches where maybe Cinderella's luck is going to run out? Because this is a Phillies team. They fired Joe Girardi. They were well under 500 when Rob Thompson took over. They got hot late. And for the last month, they've been on fire. Not that when I say a Cinderella team that's supposed to have a negative connotation, like they stink, because they don't. You have Nola, you have Wheeler. I know they haven't pitched well, but those are two phenomenal. Wheeler more than Nola. Nola has had a very good year, but in the big moments this year, he has not stepped up and delivered. But you have on paper two really good pitchers, and you have a bat that's filled with big bomb hitter after big bomb hitter. So you look at that, and you start to think to yourself, even though they've had such positive momentum for last month, with what transpired in Game 4, can there be a carryover effect in Game 5? The best way to flush it is go hit a home run, go take a 2-0 lead or a 1-0 lead in the first three innings. But if you get no hitter, you only have like one measly hit through the first three innings and the Astros take a lead, then we're going to see how the Phillies really respond to pressure. And they've had to play with their backs up against the wall just to get into the postseason. And ever since getting an invitation to the dance, they have secured a spot in the World Series as the best team in the NL. So there's a whole lot of excitement heading into this game number 5. And I just simply can't wait to see how it plays out. But the two things that I really want to see, what does Verlander look like early? And can the Phillies do some damage early, or will being no hit in game number 4 carry over into game number 5 and you have a bad Phillies offensive performance at home at game 5 of the World Series? Hickey, where are you at after last night's game? Hot Take Hickey, obviously here with us for the next 4 hours as always. First off, give me your reaction to the no-hitter, because I've heard a lot of people today, and maybe I've also seen it on Twitter too, where they're like, oh yeah, it's a no-hitter, but as to steal a line from Noah Syndergaard, which I think that was some karma last night, it's all like a real no-hitter. I don't care if it's one pitcher or if it's eight pitchers or if it's three or four pitchers. Doesn't matter to me. A no-hitter is a no-hitter, yes. When you do it with one pitcher, it's rare because we just pull pitchers all the time now because of the pitch count. And Christian Javier was awesome last night. But I thought what we saw last night was pretty damn cool if you take the cap off and if you put aside who you're rooting for in this World Series.
I truly don't understand the narrative out there that, like, it's not a real no-hitter or it's not as impressive.
So you've seen that, too. It's not just me being crazy here and exaggerating something.
Yeah, like you said, it happens more and more often now because pitchers don't go into games. And as sad as it is, it's more.
And it was bound to happen in a World Series with the way that the sport is now. Every year we bitch about, oh, this guy pulled this pitcher out while he was cruising. It happens every year. So it's bound to happen when you have a combined no-hitter in the World Series.
But it's just like, what I don't understand is how, like, if anything, I think it's more impressive to have a combined no-hitter than one guy.
Really?
Because if you look at yesterday, is a perfect example. Christian Javier, the Phillies were talking about it, the analysts were talking about it, the Astros were talking about it. That fastball he had was literally unhittable. He threw it, I think it was 70 out of 97 pitches. He just kept pumping the fastball.
Yeah, you couldn't hit him.
Phillies had no, could not touch him. Let's just say pitch count was not an issue. He throws a no-hitter. You have that one pitch that you're feeling that night. Like, what are you going to do? But, okay, he pitches six innings. Now you need three other relievers to come in and be as dominant as a starting pitcher to not just only not allow a run in the World Series, but also keep the no-hitter going. That's a lot of added pressure, and it's a lot to ask three different guys who, you never know, relievers are fickle. Sometimes they're feeling it. Sometimes you have an off day. Like, it is back and forth. It's to me, it's a lot to ask relievers to be dominant. Three in a row, so I think it's more impressive because you're asking more than just one guy who's feeling it, who has one pitch is untouchable, they can go nine innings.
I wanted to say that you were crazy when you first said it. I wanted to say that you were an idiot, a moron, and a dope. I'm not totally on your side, but you made a very good argument. I have to applaud you right out of the gate. Just like how we're looking for tonight in this World Series, the start of the World Series, right now you just sat the first three batters down on nine pitches. You did a very good job in that argument. Because I would have said to you right away, when you first said it, this is where I was about to race to and jump to, but I wanted to listen, I wanted to hear you out, that when you have a new pitcher come in, right, they have their, it's a fresh arm, they have their best stuff. But with that being said, I didn't think about it from the other side, where when Christian Javier comes out, there was probably a release from the Phillies. And, oh, thank God he's out of the game and we have a new pitcher. Because how many years, it was Rich Hill a few years ago when they pulled him, the Dodgers, and it was like, oh, someone else just came in. It was like unbelievable. Or who was the guy? I think it was Rich Hill when Mookie Betts was in the game. And Mookie Betts even said, yeah, the moment that Dave Roberts took him out of the game when he was with the Red Sox, I forget who the exact pitcher was. I think it was Rich Hill. That we just knew, okay, now we have a chance or whatever it was. To still then get shut down by those relievers is pretty damn impressive.
Blake Snell.
Thank you. Rays, Dodgers, right.
World Series. Yes, they took out Blake Snell. And it's like,
that was when Mookie Betts was on the
Dodgers.
It was on the Dodgers.
The 2020 season. Yeah. And you're right. Then it's like,
there's
wow.
There's a lot of bad Dave Roberts decisions in this postseason.
Very
it's tough to remember. And you're right. I remember doing a sports minute on it. And I even said on the show where I was like hoping that Blake Snell would have told, it was Kevin Cash, that the manager, oh, like come take the ball from my hand. But there was also, I think it was when Rich Hill pulled, not that he was throwing a no-hitter, but he did pull, I'm pretty sure in a World Series, Dodgers and Red Sox, and the Red Sox did go on to win that game, and I'm pretty sure close him out. But regardless, when there is a mental relief when you're getting dominated by someone and someone gives you a gift taking a pitcher out after 97 pitches. Now, with that being said, even though I liked your argument, just because we don't usually see pitchers throw like .130, .135, it actually may be tougher for one player to do it than to have 3-4 guys do it, because it's just, you don't usually get that opportunity. And people freak out so much about the pitch counts now. Regardless, wherever you stand on this, last night was an incredible night. And now we'll see who's going to win this best of three to award out the commissioner's trophy. And we'll see who hosts who will hoist the commissioner's trophy coming up in the next few days. It is the Zach Yelp Show on CBS Sports Radio. When we come on back, we know the two best teams in the AFC are the Buffalo Bills and the Kansas City Chiefs. Who's the biggest contender and challenger to Kansas City and Buffalo in the next 5 years in the AFC?
Football season is here. The new Odyssey app lets you stay connected to your NFL team, your station, your shows. Follow your favorite stations and come back again and again. Get real-time updates on everything you care about. Miss your show? Jump back to their awesome rewind feature. The Odyssey app is NFL football, live and on demand, wherever you are, whenever you want. And did we mention it's all free? Download the Odyssey app today.
The listening you love is on the free Odyssey app. Your trusted local radio stations, coverage of your favorite teams, live news from your hometown, and millions of podcasts on demand. Best of all, you can completely customize your listening experience. Follow topics you care about, like leagues and teams. Pause or rewind your local sports and news, and add shows to your queue to catch up later. There's a lot to listen to, so get started and download the free Odyssey app today.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
It is The Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. See, I remember I once went on a Blake Snell rant. Good find by Hickey in the break. All right, Ryan, let's get into this conversation. It's clear that heading into this year, the Buffalo Bills, we thought, were the best team in the AFC, and you were wondering who's going to be their biggest challenger. And there was a lot of conversations, the Ravens, the Bengals. You take a look, a team like the Chargers, some, not me, Hickey, cough, cough, thought the Denver Broncos, woof, that's not been good. They're sitting at 3-5. But through the first 8 weeks, now going to the ninth week of the season, it is so abundantly clear that not just the AFC, but the top three teams in the NFL, in whatever order you want, Buffalo, Kansas City, and the Philadelphia Eagles, personally, I would order those teams number one Buffalo, number two Philadelphia, and number three Kansas City. So you see in the AFC, you have a lot of young quarterbacks. Josh Allen, Zach Wilson, Tua Tagovailoa, Mac Jones, Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, Deshaun Watson, who will eventually start games for the Cleveland Browns. What can Kenny Pickett be? Trevor Lawrence, can he turn his career around? There's a lot of young quarterbacks in the AFC, and there's already established stars. For example, Mahomes, MVP established star. Josh Allen, established star. Joe Burrow, 3 years in, now being in his third year in the league, already established star. Lamar Jackson, unanimous MVP, established star. So you have established stars in the AFC, where in the NFC, you look at that conference, all right, Jalen Hurts starting to become a star. Dak Prescott, I think a good quarterback, not a great quarterback. Matthew Stafford, not looking all that hot this year. Kyler Murray, ups and down. You look at a guy like Trey Lance, not really ever on the field. Kirk Cousins, good quarterback, not great quarterback. Aaron Rodgers, great quarterback. He's not winning games though right now. Tom Brady, great quarterback. He's not winning games right now. So the AFC, you have a clearer idea of who the quarterbacks are going to be for the next, what, 5 years? You probably can't look much further than that. And there's some guys that still have a lot to prove and that are unproven players. But you know, as long as they want to be on those teams, Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Justin Herbert, those are going to be really the names that we're going to be paying attention to. Deshaun Watson, but then there's a lot of skepticism with the Browns organization. Those are probably like the 5-6 names that you feel really confident about. And if Tua continues to play the way that Tua's been playing, 5 games that he started and finished this year, the Dolphins haven't lost the game, that's another name that you throw into the fire. And just maybe, I'm not confident on this, Russell Wilson starts to turn around and maybe you could throw him in the conversation as well. And you never know who else is going to emerge, what young quarterbacks are going to take a step in the right direction, and who's going to get drafted. Like if Bryce Young or C.J. Stroud go to the Houston Texans, they definitely have star potential. So right now, Ryan, and we'll go through the teams in just a second and break this down. Bills and Chiefs, we all know for the next 5 years on paper, you would think are going to be the two best teams because of their quarterbacks in the AFC. Who do you think, out of all the names and all the possibilities that we just thrown out there, that you would right now place your money on? And they may never beat them in a big spot in a playoff game, either of those teams, because that's how good Mahomes is, that's how good Josh Allen is. But who would you put your money on right now, team-wise, that for the next 5 years you think is going to be the biggest pain in the ass for the Buffalo Bills and the Kansas City Chiefs?
I'll go with the Cincinnati Bengals. Star power, quarterback, 3 wide receivers that are really blossoming now to be, you know, really damn good.
Already beat Kansas City in a big spot?
Twice, right? Last year, late into the year, in the playoffs as well. And look, in order to beat those two teams, especially specifically, you need an offense that can throw the ball and put up points at will. Bengals I trust the most out of any other team right now that we've discussed.
My only concern about the Bengals, and I think right now with what they've done recently, your answer has to be Cincinnati, and they may take a step back this year. Bad timing of the Jamar Chase injury. That offensive line, with the money that they invested in the offensive line this offseason, bringing in Alex Kappa, bringing in Lael Collins, bringing in Ted Karras, they got to start protecting Joe Burrow. Because I know there's sometimes people go, oh, Joe Burrow hangs on to the ball too long. Joe Burrow, a lot of times, whether he hangs onto the ball too long or not, I don't think it's all on him. And I'm going to go on a limb and say most of it's not on him. He's getting destroyed. We saw year one him tear up his leg. Last year was the most sacked quarterback historically, and he somehow got to a Super Bowl. So it shows you how special of a player he is. And you know he has that chemistry going back to LSU with Jamar Chase, and their defense just keeps on getting better and better and better. My one big concern is the offensive line and how much longer can this guy continue to take a beating year in and year out before eventually it catches up to you. Caught up to him in year one. Year two, was able to stay healthy. They were, if they could get Aaron Donald blocked for an extra half second, they would have hoisted a Lombardi trophy last year. So that offensive line, I think your answer is right. But I am concerned a little bit about the Bengals because that offensive line has not played well.
Fair. But also, as you know, when you have the quarterback, that's an easier fix compared to not having the guy or not having,
agreed,
you know, an elite passing
my
game.
My answer is Cincinnati. I'm with you. I'm just saying that line scares the you-know-what out of me.
And rightfully so.
If we take Cincinnati out of the conversation, who then would be the next team? Because then you're looking at a field of the Baltimore Ravens, Tennessee's been really good, but they're going to need a new quarterback because Ryan Tannehill is not winning jack in this league. The Chargers are intriguing, and I think they may need a coaching change to reach their full potential. Miami has taken a step in the right direction this year. If you take the Bengals out of that conversation, are you looking for that fourth team for the next 5 years, Bills, Chiefs, and we throw in the Cincinnati Bengals, who would then be teams 4 and 5 for you for the next 5 years that you're going to actually rely big on?
I will say Ravens 4. Lamar is just the best quarterback out of that group, and
I hope they get him a wide receiver, too.
That's it. Like,
now, they've tried, right? They drafted Marquise Hollywood Brown. He was a number one wide receiver. I think you liked Rashad Bateman. I did like Rashad Bateman as well. Him and Tyler Johnson were fun to watch when they were with Mr. Row Your Boat and P.J. Fleck at Minnesota. But now this is the second year in a row as Rashad Bateman's going to be out for the year that was announced today where he's not been able to stay on the field. If they want to go win a Super Bowl, and they have a great team, but if they want to go win a Super Bowl and they have a phenomenal organization, I think you need more than just Mark Andrews. I know that team has generated so much off the legs and the arm of Lamar Jackson, but I think you need another legit number one weapon to add to your arsenal and come up with even more creativity if they're going to want to take down a team like Buffalo or a team like Kansas City in the postseason, because they've defeated them before in the regular season.
I'm with you. Yeah, you need that extra weapon that, you know, right now Kansas City has and Buffalo has and even Cincinnati. You just need one more. That's not a lot or not a big ask, but so far, like you mentioned, Buffalo's been unable to find it. As for five,
who do you hit your wagon to for this fifth spot? I'm surprised you haven't said one team with how outspoken you've been about this team, and you have kind of been leading the charge about this team in the offseason, and it was one of the rare times where you've been right so far.
I'm assuming you're talking about the Dolphins.
Yeah.
I will take the Dolphins.
You're Mr. Tuinon. You've been crazy with your support of Tua Tagovailoa.
He's been very, I just believe a lot of the criticism has been unfair. I have a good team around him. Look, he's all of a sudden he's showing he's good. He is good quarterback. I'll go Dolphins 5.
Yeah, I just got to see a little bit more from the Dolphins to put them there with where they're at the end of the season. I think the fifth spot's very open. Like, if we're talking about the next 5 years in the AFC, clearly Bills, Chiefs, Ravens, Bengals, as assuming Lamar stays with the Baltimore Ravens, those are the teams you're the most confident with. But I'll give you a team that I've believed in. I may be getting burned by this year, but I'm going to think that this team is going to go get Sean Payton in this offseason, and that's going to be Los Angeles Chargers. If you have Herbert and Payton together next year, I think that could be a just dominant force. How about the Browns? Nick Chubb is awesome. Myles Garrett is a great defensive player in this league. Deshaun Watson was looking like he was well on his way to being a top five quarterback in this league. He's impossible to trust off the field, but when he gets on the field, he had a horrible team in Houston last time we saw him play football, and he had a horrible team, and he led the league in passing yards. Is it we just got to see how much rust there is to knock off, and we can't trust Deshaun Watson? There's always a stench around the Cleveland Browns. Whenever you start to think they're about to turn it around the last few years, they not only have a bad performance, they really bottom out. The Freddie Kitchens year, people were high on them, bottomed out. Last year, coming off a very successful season, getting the playoffs for the first time since 2002, winning a playoff game for the first time since 1995, they bottomed out. Is it just because until you see that organization have sustained success, even though they brought in a really good quarterback who is just a jerk off the field and a terrible person off the field, it is tough to really believe that they're going to consistently get it done in Cleveland?
I just got to see what Deshaun Watson is. He hasn't played football in 2 years. I still think he has a lot of talent. And if he kind of picks up where he left off eventually in 2020, then absolutely the Browns are, I would consider moving them up to even number three, depending on how, you know, we go. But there's still a long way to go between now and then.
That AFC North
defense to turn around as well.
That AFC North has a lot of potential.
It does. It does.
If the Ravens, who have been great, if the Ravens go at a number one wide receiver in the offseason, that offense gets another weapon. If the Bengals could ever protect Joe Burrow, they almost won a Super Bowl without doing it last year. The Browns have potential with Watson. Just can't trust him. And the Steelers, I know that the Steelers are in a bad spot right now, and Alan Faneca is going to join us at 8:20 p.m. Eastern, 5:20 p.m. Pacific. But the Steelers do kind of get the benefit of the doubt that they'll eventually be able to turn it around because Tomlin's a good coach. I don't know what Kenny Pickett's going to be. They have a lot of good names on that defense, but that's been such a well-run organization for so many years, and there's not been a lot of change. You got to think eventually the Steelers will get that train moving back in the right direction. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We'll break. We'll come on back with the news brief.
Football season is here. The new Odyssey app lets you stay connected to your NFL team, your station, your shows. Follow your favorite stations and come back again and again. Get real-time updates on everything you care about. Miss your show? Jump back to their awesome rewind feature. The Odyssey app is NFL football, live and on demand, wherever you are, whenever you want. And did we mention it's all free? Download the Odyssey app today.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show. For your daily news brief, we get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
Let's hear from Aaron Rodgers. This is Aaron Rodgers on if he was hoping the Packers would make a move at the trade deadline.
My hopes are always up in life. You know, I'm an optimistic person, and obviously the compensation or whatever players that we were going after just didn't make sense. So I trust Brian, and we had some good conversations. Know that we were, you know, in on some things, and it obviously just didn't pan out.
Sometimes Aaron Rodgers is his own worst enemy, is probably the best way to say it. At this point, though, when there's been so many years where we've been looking for them to add someone to complement, and clearly Adams is no longer there, but to complement Devontae Adams, and they were reaching, right? Like, they were hoping that Jimmy Graham was going to be able to find the fountain of youth. They were hoping that Sammy Watkins was going to be able to play in Green Bay. They were hoping a guy like Devin Funchess, remember? That was during the COVID. I don't even think he ended up playing for them. They were hoping that he was going to finally be able to stay healthy. Green Bay just makes these hope moves. And you get rid of Devontae Adams, and that's one thing. Like, Adams didn't want to be there anymore. He was sick and tired of having to wait to get that contract done. He actually left money on the table to leave Green Bay and go to Las Vegas. Dumb move, but hey, he's entitled to it. Let him do what he wants to do. And they really had the audacity to go into this season relying on Alan Lazard, Romeo Doubs, Christian Watson, one of those players emerging as a number one wide receiver. Even if one of those players really had a good year, they're more so a number two than a number one when you look at most teams. So I think Rodgers, Ryan, is probably at a point where he has wanted changes for so many years and he hasn't got them. So I think when you just consistently don't get what you want in terms of getting other wide receivers in the building, you kind of just admit defeat and go, I'm not going to get my hopes up just to get let down once again.
Fair, because it's, you know, the definition of insanity otherwise, and I'm sure he'd drive himself crazy. What I don't understand is then why did the Packers bring Aaron Rodgers back? Like, why'd you go all in, give him a mega contract? We've talked to the dead cap where if you were tired.
Well, I think he wanted to come back.
But then why aren't you going all in on, like, well, they wanted him back, though, too. It's like they also agreed to the deal. Like, if you were not willing to basically do what you got to do for a 38-year-old quarterback to try to win a Super Bowl in the next, I'd say, 2 to 3 years, hey, what are we doing? They're basically punting on this season. Which, if you had Jordan Love at quarterback, is one thing, fine. But you have a 30-year-old quarterback that's there for another year or two. Like, are you trying to maximize it or no?
I agree with what you're saying. Now, could I just give you what their answer probably would be?
Sure.
Aaron Rodgers, the previous 3 years, 13-3, 13-3, 13-3, back-to-back MVPs in this league. I know he doesn't have Devontae Adams anymore, but they probably gave Rodgers the benefit of the doubt in a division where the Lions stink, the Bears stink. And even though I was optimistic about Minnesota heading into this year, I don't think anyone thought Minnesota was going to be 6-1. So they probably still thought, even with all these changes and losing Za'Darius Smith, losing Devontae Adams, they thought just because of the quarterback, they would have enough to be a double-digit win team. And not only that, there was only two teams that we really took seriously in the NFC, where it was Tampa Bay and it was also the LA Rams. So if you're still a top three team on paper heading into a season, you feel as if you still got a shot. So that's why Rodgers is there.
You know, that's fair before the season, but like at the trade deadline. Like now you're 3-6. Like your season's cooked. Them again. I don't think anyone is the answer. I don't think Brandon Cooks is saving the season personally. So I don't think a move is drastically changing the course of the year. With that said, don't you have to try? Like, don't you owe it to almost yourself?
Well, then who's the guy that you're going to get? Because you said Brandon Cooks you didn't think was going to save the season. Now,
and that would be the guy you go get. I think he's the best receiver.
And I think Brandon Cooks, you're not giving him enough credit.
So, I mean,
they're going to win this weekend, you would think, right?
You got to take it. Like, don't you at least got to take a swing to verify or justify bringing Rodgers back? Like,
you would think so. Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with you on that. They're 3-5 right now. They're going to win this weekend against the Lions.
Yeah,
be a lot of points. I hammer the over on that. But then you get to 4-5. Their next three games after that, Dallas, tough game. Even though that's in Lambeau. Tennessee Titans on Thursday Night Football. It's a tough game. And then you have the Philadelphia Eagles Thanksgiving weekend on Sunday Night Football. You got to beat to salvage the season. They got to beat the Lions clearly. That goes without saying.
Hot take.
If they lose the Lions to the Lions, geez.
Flush the year down the
toilet. We're on like five stations in Wisconsin. We're going to have a ridiculous amount of callers on Monday if they somehow lose to the Lions. And we will have a therapy show on Monday for all fans of the go Pack, go! If they somehow lose to the Detroit Lions. But then they got to take 2 out of 3 against Dallas, Tennessee, and Philadelphia. And right now, how can you expect this team to take 2 out of 3 against those teams?
I was just going to ask, do you think that's realistic? I'm with you. That'd be very surprising if they do win 2 out of 3.
Yeah, I would probably bet the other way that they're probably going to lose 2 out of 3. Let's go to Tua Tagovailoa. He says the Dolphins aren't shying away from lofty expectations this season.
Throughout OTAs and throughout training camp, we could see the potential that we had as a team, offensively and defensively. And, you know, we're not afraid to talk about Super Bowls here. We're not afraid to talk about, you know, going to a playoff game, having the opportunity to go to one and then, you know, hopefully winning one.
And let's also hear, too, a joke with the media about the biggest area his game has grown in has been the deep ball a little bit. Let's listen up.
I think I've grown a lot with the deep balls, huh? Don't we think?
Ooh.
Yeah?
Yeah! That was
probably a subtle jab, but it was a jab.
That was a pretty direct jab. I don't think that was a subtle jab whatsoever. Kind of like the confidence of Tua Tagovailoa. Not that he wasn't confident in his previous years, but now he has the support of his head football coach talking about Brian Flores, who did not support him. And then he wouldn't be saying those things with Nick Saban because Saban has a chip installed into everyone's head. And the moment where you're about to say something, it's, do not embarrass the Alabama program. Remember Quinn and Williams? I will never forget that. Yeah, he was about to say Kyler Murray sucks. And as he was saying, Kyler Murray's not that. And then the Saban chip went off in his cabeza. Let's go to Kyle Schwarber of the Philadelphia Phillies. Game number 5 coming up later tonight at 8:03 p.m. Eastern. They got no hit last night. Big Kyle ain't concerned.
I really don't give a nope. Move on to tomorrow. It's cool. We'll be in the history books, I guess.
Can you say that you really don't give a bleep about getting no hit in the World Series?
Clearly you do.
It definitely does. Whenever you say you don't really care about something and you sound pissed off, and he was clearly pissed off last night, as he should, they got no hit in the World Series, you do care. That, to me, is the most compelling storyline entering this game tonight. Now, everyone's going to talk about Justin Verlander and Justin Verlander being horrible in his career in the World Series. 0-6, a 6.07 ERA. It's just such an enigma because of how great of a pitcher he is, and he's pitched in a World Series in 3 different decades, which is just ridiculous. But he's a Hall of Fame pitcher. He has not pitched well in the World Series. For the Phillies, though, you're at home. You know those fans will hold you accountable if you're not playing well, and they will boo you. If you don't get some runs early, I'm just curious, mentally, if this team that has climbed out of holes all throughout the year is going to be able to do it one more time and win a game 5 tonight if they don't get some early base runners on.
The pressure only mounts. You know, you kind of see, especially when it's home runner or bust. Saw the other side. If you're not hitting home runs, it's not very good offense.
I'm really sick and tired of talking about Kyrie Irving. I just have no energy to talk about this anymore, and I think the guy's a complete and utter clown. But we'll play you one Kyrie clip from today. Kyrie Irving is asked if he has anti-Semitic beliefs.
For the record, do you have any anti-Semitic beliefs?
Again, I'm going to repeat. I don't know how the label becomes justified because you guys ask me the same questions over and over again. But this is not going to turn into a spin-around cycle of questions upon questions. I told you guys how I felt. I respect all walks of life and embrace all walks of life. That's where I sit.
I think what people want to hear, though, is just a yes or no on that question. Yes or no.
I cannot be anti-Semitic if I know where I come from.
That guy's such a pompous jerk. How does anyone take him seriously? And I grew up as a Nets fan. I have Kyrie Irving gear before he was even on the Nets. I hope they lose every game for the rest of the season. He is so unlikable. He is such a clown. And what he did was wrong. He shared a video where in the video it says the Holocaust never happened. Okay? And when you get asked, are you anti-Semitic or not? It's an easy yes or no. And you can't say, no, I'm not. And you just can't take your L. I just don't even care anymore. He's a waste of time. And the guy is a disgrace. And anyone that supports him, I don't know how you do so. Because he always says these crazy things. Sometimes he does some good things. You know, I'm not going to shy away from that. But there's a lot of stuff that this guy does that you just can't defend. And the only one that had any balls, it wasn't Adam Silver. It wasn't Joe Tsai. It was Shaq. It was Charles Barkley. And also Reggie Miller. Those guys have class. Those guys have guts. Those guys have balls. Adam Silver, nowhere to be found. Other than a little statement. Way too late. Joe Tsai, little statement, didn't do anything. Sick and tired of Kyrie Irving. What a clown.
The listening you love is on the free Odyssey app. Your trusted local radio stations. Coverage of your favorite teams. Live news from your hometown. And millions of podcasts on demand. Best of all, you can completely customize your listening experience. Follow topics you care about, like leagues and teams. Pause or rewind your local sports and news. And add shows to your queue to catch up later. There's a lot to listen to. So get started and download the free Odyssey app today.
Football season is here. The new Odyssey app lets you stay connected to your NFL team, your station, your shows. Follow your favorite stations and come back again and again. Get real-time updates on everything you care about. Miss your show? Jump back to their awesome rewind feature. The Odyssey app is NFL football, live and on demand, wherever you are, whenever you want. And did we mention it's all free? Download the Odyssey app today.